The word that I would like to look at today is miraculous. And as we thought about last Sunday, at least Sunday night, I believe we said we was going to talk about babies a little bit. I'd like to talk about babies again today. And I'd like to just, I don't know, it's not like I'm trying to create something here that would just, I want us to be encouraged, I want us to be challenged, but I want our understanding to be expanded. You know, it's kind of like this time of year, if you've been an employee, we have customarily got used to receiving some type of Christmas bonus. Now, most everybody that's worked a public job, at Christmas time, you've some type of acknowledgement. It might be small, and I guess some places it's rather large, but I've never worked at one of those places. But we as a society, we have, in our United States anyway, we have come to the place that we kind of anticipate some type of Christmas bonus. So, have you ever stopped to think what kind of impact that has on the bank account of the employer? I mean, I don't disagree that all of the employees ought to get something special at Christmas time. I think that's appropriate. I think it's the right thing to do. But sometimes, you know, if everybody got the same amount of bonus that I did, you know, at my place of work, and how many people work for this company? And that's a pretty simple multiplication problem, you know. If there's 50 people that work there, or 1,250 people that work there, and everybody got whatever the bonus was, got the same as me, how much money would that be? Just as a gift. So this morning, I would like for us to just like it would might expand our understanding. I'm not saying that the companies couldn't do more or shouldn't do more. That's not a debate. I'm just want us to expand our understanding in the line of how miraculous it is that Christ came into the world. So I'd like to start over here in Ecclesiastes, the 11th chapter, and I want to notice what the writer says here. He says in verse 5 of chapter 11, he says, "As thou knowest not what is the way of the Spirit, nor how the bones do grow in the womb of her that is with child, even so thou knowest not the works of God who maketh all." So he said here that we don't understand how bones grow in a little child. They get here with bones in them. They get here with arms and legs and a back and fingers and toes, and all of those have bones in them. And how'd that happen? How did this all come about? It's a miracle, is it not? You know, all of the understanding that man has about the process of a child developing and being born and all of that, they still can't duplicate it. They're not able to do that. They think that their understanding is advanced to the point that they can modify. And one of the words that have brought a lot of apprehension to our minds and all is the word clone, cloning. That's brought a lot of apprehension to us over the last few years. But they still can't duplicate the miracle of a child coming into this world. It's taken men almost a little over 6,000 years, to my calculation, to get to where they're at, and they still can't do it. 6,000 years, and they still can't do it. And God spoke it into existence on the sixth day of creation, and it still works. It still works. Got a new grandson not so long ago, and the miracle of he's got bones, he's got little feet and fingers, and he's got ears, and he has eyes, and then it's so complex, before I think he realized what he did, he smiled. I think he's developed enough now that he smiles because he recognizes mama, or he has a little happy thought. It's getting there. He's smiling on purpose, I think, now. He still smiles just because. But you think how miraculous that is. You know, I'm real confident that if man figured out how to make it happen, he would forget to put some of that in there. Some of that ability to smile, or some of that ability to maybe smell, or the sense of touch. You know, we even have a sense of presence. I don't know, what is it about us that when someone comes up behind us and we kind of perceive that they're there, but we're not looking there? Do you ever notice that? Am I the only one? Am I kind of odd? But I think all of us here, if we're concentrating on something and all of a sudden it's like all of our sensory equipment has went into overlapping and, our sense of maybe feeling temperature and hearing sounds and smelling smells, and all of that has come in and it's kind of went into something that I think somebody's behind me. And you turn around and maybe it's your spouse, or maybe it's your child that's trying to sneak up on you. I never could surprise my dad. At least if I did, he didn't let me know it. I don't know, maybe his perception that there's somebody I've hid behind the door. And I know my dad didn't know I was there. And he would come through the hall and come through, and I don't know, did he perceive I was there, or was he just so stoic that I never did? I don't know. But we have those abilities. It's miraculous, isn't it? And I'm going to tell you, what we come with and what we're able to develop into is, it's just a miracle. It's just a miracle. Let's turn to Exodus, the 7th chapter. And I want us to look here and I'm just trying to get our minds to thinking this morning of how miraculous it is for a child, a normal, healthy child, to come into this world. And if we look here in Exodus chapter 7 in verse 9, y'all will probably think this is kind of an odd place to read for this subject, but it says, "When Pharaoh shall speak unto you, saying, shew a miracle for you, then thou shalt say unto Aaron, take thy rod and cast it before Pharaoh, and it shall become a serpent. And Moses and Aaron went in unto Pharaoh, and they did as the Lord had commanded. And Aaron cast down his rod before Pharaoh and before his servants, and it became a serpent. Then Pharaoh also called the wise men, and sorcerers, now the magicians of the Egypt, now the magicians of Egypt, and they also did like manner with their enchantments, and they cast down their every man his rod, and they became servants, but they couldn't do what Aaron's rod did. But Aaron's rod swallowed up their rods, and he hardened Pharaoh's heart. So I want us to stop. You remember this magic trick that God showed them how to do? Well, it was miraculous. It wasn't a magic trick. Aaron was able to throw his rod on the ground, and it became a serpent. And then when he picked it up by the tail, it became a rod again. But when they got in Pharaoh's presence, Pharaoh brought in his magicians, man's understanding and wisdom, and sometimes even other spirits besides God's spirit. And the combination of all of that produced something that looked pretty similar. You know, man feels pretty accomplished today with what he can do with messing with DNA. Man feels pretty good about that. But it's still not miraculous, and it's still not God. And what happened was, they were able, with their spirit of whatever, it wasn't God's spirit, and their knowledge and their understanding, it said their enchantments, I don't know if they put some stew in a big kettle and had it over a fire and said mumbo jumbo and then throwed the rod. I don't know what they did. But their rods became serpents as well. But Aaron's rod that became a serpent swallowed up them. And there was at least two, because it's a plural here. I don't know. There might have been 10. I've heard of one snake swallowing another snake, but I've never heard of one snake swallowing multiple snakes, not in one setting. But this one did. And I don't think that Moses and Aaron left with a snake on the ground. I think Aaron left with his rod in his hand. And I don't think that this rod was 10 feet tall and 4 inches in diameter when it left. I think it was just the same as it was when he came. And those men went home without a rod. What I'm talking about here is the miraculous abilities that God has. And I want us to realize how miraculous it is that we can have a child born to us. I'm talking about natural children that come into this world and they learn so many things by the time they're 2 or 3 years old. But they come here of a divine miracle from God. It's beyond our understanding. How does this happen? The writer in Ecclesiastes says, I don't know how this works. But when a child comes here, they have a skeletal framework. You know, they look like a miniature version of a grown person. They're just all of their pieces are there. They're just smaller. Now let's go to Psalms 139. And notice what the psalmist said. You know, David was very impressed with the miracle of children coming into this world. And let's turn to Psalms 139 and maybe read beginning verse 13. He says, For thou hast possessed my reins, thou hast covered me in my mother's womb. You know, down at the end of the chapter, David said, Search me, O Lord, and see if there's any wicked way in me. He was, from beginning to end, David was convinced of God's miraculous power and ability. And he said here in verse 14, I will praise thee, Lord, for I am fearfully and wonderfully made. Marvelous are thy works, and that my soul knoweth right well. I'm convinced of it. My substance was not hid from thee when I was made in secret and curiously wrought in the lowest part of the earth. Thine eyes did see my substance, yet being unperfect. And in thy book all my members were written, which in continuance were fashioned, when as yet there was none of them. What's he talking about? He's talking about the miraculous development of himself, but of any little baby that's born. He said, you were keeping records of me before there was any real reality. How precious are thy thoughts unto me, O God. How great is the sum of them. He was convinced that God knew him and knew about him and was aware of him before he became, as maybe today we would be told, a viable form of life. David was convinced that the miracle was in process. It is nothing short of a divine miracle when we have a little child come into our lives. It's incredible. Now I'd like to go to Matthew, the first chapter. And I'd like for us to get an understanding here of what it meant for Jesus to come. We know, and I don't think it's the time or the place to go into that, but we know what instigates a child coming into this world. And it says here in Matthew 1, chapter 20, or verse 22 of chapter 1, it says, now all this was done that it might be fulfilled which was spoken of the Lord by the prophet, saying. So God prophesied through a prophet, and we're going to read that, that this would happen. He said, behold, a virgin shall be with child and shall bring forth a son, and they shall call his name Emmanuel, which being interpreted is God with us. Now, we've been talking thus far of how much of a miracle it is for a child to come, this little miniature version of mama, or a little version, miniature version of daddy. This incredible little life that has come in to our home, and it is so amazing in so many ways, and it causes our hearts and our love and our affection to just go out. And we see this, parents and grandparents and other people. You know, if there's a new baby that comes to service, we think something's wrong if somebody doesn't want to go see the new baby. It's miraculous, isn't it? And then, y'all know about exponents. You know, 2 to the 2nd power and the 3rd power and the 4th power and the 5th power and all that. And so for Jesus to come, it was this miracle, but it was exponential. All right? Because I know, and Mary knew, she was a young lady, but she knew that it can't happen this way. No matter how, I'm sure that she had held a newborn baby before. She had maybe siblings, and maybe she was, I don't know if she was the oldest or the youngest, but I'm sure she had at least cousins, or there was some little child had come into her neighborhood or her life. She had held a little baby and witnessed this miracle. And when it was told to her that she was going to have a child, it was like, this can't happen. But the prophet said that it would happen. It said, behold, a virgin shall be with child and shall bring forth a son, and shall call his name Emmanuel, and which being interpreted is God with us. So no matter how much our understanding is of how this miraculous thing happens when a child comes into our world, into our lives, for Jesus to come, it was miracle times miracle. You understand? It was exponential. For Jesus to be able to be born as a man, God coming as a man, it was miraculous miracle, if you want to. It was compounded. It was not commonplace. It was not old hat, or it was not something that was easily explainable. Well, if you nail two boards together, then you make... No, it's not like that. This was a miraculous event, period, for a child to come into this world. But for it to be a child of God and come in this manner, it was a miraculous miracle for him to come. So Isaiah 7 and verse 14 is the prophet, and this is where it's recorded. Let's read that. Isaiah chapter 7, and notice what the prophet says in verse 14. He says, therefore the Lord himself shall give you a sign. Behold, a virgin shall conceive and bear a son, and shall call his name Emmanuel. That's what Matthew was referring to. That's what the angel was talking about. That's what was happening. It's a fulfillment of prophecy. This miraculous development of a child that God spoke into existence with the simple words for mankind to go and multiply and replenish the earth. And man has spent 6,000 years and they still can't do it. They tamper with it and they have more failure than success. God spoke it into action in one day. That was just one of the things he did that day. And now we have a miraculous miracle that came in the form of a child. It came as Jesus. And it came to be a blessing. I believe it's exponential. I'd like to turn now to St. John, the third chapter, and notice another man that I believe was aware of the miracle of a child coming into this world. Begin reading in verse 1. It says, there was a man of the Pharisees named Nicodemus, a ruler of the Jews. The same came to Jesus by night and said unto him, Rabbi, we know that thou art a teacher come from God, for no man can do these miracles that thou doest except God be with him. He was trying to set the stage because he had an important question for him. Jesus answered and said unto him, verily, verily, I say unto thee, except a man be born again, he cannot see the kingdom of God. And Nicodemus, I believe, was an educated man. He says here that he was a Pharisee, a ruler of the Jews. He had a place of leadership, probably a place of authority we'd consider. And Jesus said, you cannot see the kingdom of God except you're born again. And I can imagine that Nicodemus's mind just went into a whirl. Maybe he was a Maybe he was a grandfather by then. I don't know, but he was a man that my guess is was of the age that he could have had children at least. And his mind went into, you can't see, you can't be part of the kingdom unless you're born again. And his mind went into thinking about the miracle of a child coming. And so he asked, he says, how can a man be born when he's old? What are we talking about? How does this happen? He says, can he enter the second time into his mother's womb and be born? That could cause a lot of problems because maybe his mother was gone by now. Maybe he felt hopeless. You know, sin causes people to feel hopeless. Sin... What if you're of an age where your parents are gone and your mother's gone, and even if you could miraculously be born again naturally, which it won't happen unless God says it's supposed to happen that way, but he hasn't ever done that, but we can be born again in the Spirit. And Jesus was answers to him was, verily, verily, I say unto thee, except a man be born of water and of the Spirit, he cannot enter into the kingdom of God. So, you know how miraculous it is for a little child to come? It's exponentially miraculous that Jesus came, the Son of God, to bless humanity. But it is a miraculous birth when you and I are born again of the water and the Spirit. A new creature, the New Testament teaches us. All things are passed away. All things become new. This is an opportunity for us to step into another dimension where we can have fellowship with God. The one that we were fearful of before is now, we can say, Abba, Father. Now we can be a joint heir with Jesus Christ. That is nothing short of miraculous. No one can be, I'm not worthy, nor could I earn the position of being a child of God. It's a miracle. It's just a miracle that I can be born again. It's a miracle for me to have held my newborn children or grandchildren. It's a miracle for us to be born again. It was a miraculous miracle for Jesus to come into this world as a little baby, as what looked like a man. So thinking about this time of year and worshiping the sun, I would just like to throw out a few things here. It's one thing to set up a nativity scene and to teach our children this is how Jesus came into the world. I don't have a conflict with that. I think that we should read the Bible story. We should talk about how Jesus came as a little baby. And he came and grew into a man that did miraculous things, and he died for me where I could be saved. But it's a totally different thing to bow down before an infant figurine and to worship that. That's a totally different thing. It's one thing to use a prop to teach young children because they're very visual and they need to be able to see that Jesus came as a little baby. And they need to be taught how miraculous it was for God to come in the flesh. But let's don't worship the baby. Let's don't worship the baby. And let's don't worship the mother. I believe it's good to honor Mary and give her her rightful place, the one that was not only qualified, but she was willing to be the mother of Jesus. And I believe it's good to recount the events that led up to Jesus coming into this world, but I don't believe God wants us to bow down and worship an image of Mary, because that would be idolatry. I believe we should worship the Son that set me free, and the Son that's sitting at the right hand of His Father today. I believe that's what we ought to worship. But I don't believe we ought to have a crucifixion that we bow down to. But we need to worship Him in spirit. We're not going to put a crucifixion up on the wall and when we walk by, bow our heads and worship. But we're worshiping the act of sacrifice that He gave on the cross to be crucified for my sins. Jesus said in the 4th chapter of John, maybe we'll turn and read that and bring our thought to a close. He says, John 4 and verse 19 beginning, He said, "The woman said unto Him," this was the woman at the well, "I perceive that Thou art a prophet. Our fathers worshipped in this mountain, and ye say that in Jerusalem is the place where men ought to worship. Jesus saith unto her, "Woman, believe me, the hour cometh when ye shall neither in this mountain nor at Jerusalem worship the Father. Ye worship, ye know not what? We know what we worship, for salvation is of the Jews. But the hour cometh, and now is, when the true worshipers shall worship the Father in spirit and in truth. For the Father seeketh such to worship Him. God is a spirit, and they that worship Him must worship Him in spirit and in truth." Jesus said, don't bow down to anything on this earth. Don't worship a place. I am so thankful for the places I have been that God's Spirit has witnessed to me in those places. I'm so thankful that we can invite the Spirit of the Lord into our services. And I want to worship that. And I want to bow down to that. And I want to worship the Lord in spirit and truth. I don't want us to have a crucifixion that we bow down to. I don't want us to have an image of Mary that we bow down to. And no matter how miraculous the miracle of Jesus coming into this world was, and it was, folks, it's the most miraculous miracle that could have ever happened. It went beyond any other miracle that He performed or anything that's ever happened since or before. For God to be able to come to this earth through the miracle of being born a little baby, but yet He came through an avenue where mankind would say it's not possible. It was miraculous, and it was a miracle. But I don't want us to worship the infant Jesus. I want us to worship Him in spirit and in truth. I want us to reverence His, I want us to commemorate His birth. I don't want to get into an argument of when He was born. I want us to commemorate His birth. I want us to have a spirit of giving and a spirit of worship about us. I want us to be in awe of what it meant for Jesus to come to this earth. I want us to be in awe of what it meant for Mary to be the mother. I want us to be in awe of the sacrifice he gave. But I don't want any symbolisms erected in my life where I physically bow down to an idol. I want to worship in spirit and truth. Am I clear? I want my understanding to be expanded that this is, he said, you can't be part of my kingdom unless you're born again. But it's not being born like that miracle was when you got here in the beginning. It's being born of the Spirit. It's being able to worship Him in spirit and in truth. May we have this Christmas season. And I know some might have conflict with even using the word Christmas because they feel like it's connected with an organization that they don't approve of. And I don't approve of that organization either. But I just want us to realize that there is an appropriate time. There is an appropriateness of coming to grips with Jesus came in a miraculous manifestation of a miracle. And he came because he loved us. And he cared about us. And he wanted to give us an example. And then he was willing to pay the price where I could be saved. And where I could be free from sin and death. And where I could be in fellowship, spiritual fellowship. And I don't know what a day, what that day is going to be like. But like this little song, the portion of the song we sang this morning in Sunday school, it's going to be a day. What a day that's going to be. When my Jesus, I see, the one that came in a miraculous miracle way to this earth, lived the life, paid the price, and is standing or sitting, whatever the case may be, at the right hand of the Father. He's going to be welcoming us home. It's going to be a wonderful day, and I want to be prepared. I don't want to let my oil go out in my lamp. I want to have my lamp. I want to have some extra oil. If he tarries, I want to have enough oil to supply me until he gets here, until he calls my name. I desire your prayers. I want to be faithful.